Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Update. This is Sequoia and I'm a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. And I know we say this every week that we have a very special guest, but we do. I'm really pleased to introduce Jen today to talk about something that's, I think, very near and dear to all of our hearts. She's going to give us an update on Africa today. Jen, you have some news for us?
I have so much news, Sequoia. I really appreciate you being willing to do the interview today because I suddenly realized recently as I was doing some of the work in Africa that we haven't had a forum to talk about it in the public setting in quite a while, and there's so much fun stuff going on. So I just thought it would be fun to give people an update today.
That's great. I'm excited. I can't wait to hear.
So as I put it, it was interesting actually making my list. 10 minutes is a short period of time, so I'm going to try to. I had the image of, you know, when you have to talk really fast at the end of a commercial to make all those disclaimers that say, you know, if you take this product to cure your anxiety, you're going to die of a heart attack in 3 weeks, that sort of thing. So I had the image of, boy, I have a lot to say. But I'll just, I decided instead I'm going to cover just a few topics that I think are really indicative of the project and the power of the project and that sort of thing. So the first one I chose is Veronica. So Veronica is an amazing woman. She's sort of, in a way, she's second in command to Teresa, although she really is, you know, she's one of the cooperatives. She's not in a particularly, she's not the co-leader or anything like that, but she's, because of her intelligence, her tenacity, her hard work, her big heart, her sense of humor, actually, she has a great sense of humor, she's really become a critical person in the cooperative. And I got some news the other day that was so exciting that she has passed with flying colors her grade 12 exam. And I just have to give a little bit of the background on that because to put it into context, she's almost 40, very late 30s. She's the mother of 9 children, grandmother of 1, I believe. I think she just has 1 grandchild so far. And when we met her, she had not finished her grade 9. And, of course, she had wanted to, but her family didn't have the funds to do it. And so that was years and years and years ago. And the first thing she did when she started working for Living Compassion and had a salary was to re-enroll herself in school. And in Zambia, they don't have anything like a GED. So if you want to finish 9th grade, well, then you have to go to 9th grade. And then you go to 10th grade. And then you go, I mean, the whole thing. And, of course, she's working during the day and has all these kids, and she's doing this at night. And what is so moving and extraordinary to me is where that kind of perseverance comes from. You know, here's this woman who's living in really dire poverty from our perspective, and she's got all these children. No one around her has any opportunity at all. What has her picking herself up, working all day, going at night, walking 45 minutes at least each way to go take these classes, study like crazy for these exams, and actually complete the education, have the foresight to see the opportunity that this is going to bring to her and her family. So it was such a moment when I read that. I was just so excited for her.
That's extremely exciting. Talk about lit up. That's Veronica. And I just can't help but think, you know, the impact that Living Compassion has made in her life and the support to continue her education. It's phenomenal.
Yeah. That's a really good point, actually. And just how it takes the whole circle. So she's taking advantage of the opportunity that Living Compassion has provided. And by doing that, she's giving back so much to her community. The more education is brought in there, the more she's going to, you know, for herself, for her family, but also she'll be a role model for everyone in that community. The next thing I thought I would fill people in on is sort of a sad piece of news, but an important one for the project, and in a way not so sad. Anne was one of the, well, she was the oldest member of the cooperative. She was very elderly. I actually don't know how old she was exactly. It's kind of hard to tell. But she lived, she worked with Living Compassion until she just couldn't work anymore. And her house happened to be right next door to the property. And so it was really quite nice because the members in the cooperative could go and visit her and even care for her quite a bit. She had 11 children in the course of her life, and every one of them had died. Lots of them in their adulthood of HIV/AIDS. And so she was really alone in many ways. You know, in Africa, family is really, really important. So she did have grandchildren and nieces and nephews and that sort of thing who would come by, and she had a grandson who lived with her, but he really wasn't there during the day. And it got to the point where she really couldn't get out of bed. She could only crawl around a little bit, and she was really beginning to suffer quite a bit. And I found out from Teresa that she died about a week ago. So we're just really holding her in our heart and wishing her well as she makes that transition. And so glad that she was a part of the team and we got to know her. She's a very, very sweet woman, and that she's finished her time on Earth for now. And, you know, we wish her well as she makes that next step. The next thing I wanted to tell people about was the Girls Club. I think people know that Rose, our nurse at the property, started a girls program about a year plus ago now. And for whatever reason, the stars have aligned in the last couple months, and the girls are coming in droves to be part of that. Actually, I think a big piece of it is that one of the things that Rose is really focused on is teaching them particular skills. And so Teresa sent me these fabulous pictures, which, by the way, we're working on a forum to be able to share the pictures and the news. Teresa's really become quite a good reporter. She takes these great pictures, sends me little news with them, and that sort of thing. So we're working on a way to have that be available for people to see. But she sent me these pictures of the bags that these girls have knit. They've each knit themselves a crocheted bag that they use for books and that sort of thing, and they're just beside themselves proud. And I looked at them and I thought, oh, I would completely buy one of those bags. So I think that's a piece of what's really drawing the girls in, is seeing, whoa, this is really, you can really learn something here in particular. And what's funny about it is that it's attracted the boys too. Now, they're not yet into crocheting. We haven't taken that cultural step yet, but Rose has introduced chess, playing chess. And so there are the boys playing chess, the girls doing their things. We're working on, and I know Teresa and Rose are really working on getting the kids to be game for it, but to kind of cross it over, you know, teach the boys some crocheting and teach the girls chess. But the other day they had a sports day where they all just got outside. Apparently, even so, cooperative members with the kids were playing on teams, and they were playing soccer and netball and all sorts of things, and apparently just had a ball. So that's a really fun thing that the program is growing so much.
That, again, is really exciting. I having been to Africa last year, it's just great. I can visualize all the activity there at the compound, and it's so exciting to hear about the Girls Club growing. I remember seeing the girls there, and you know, it just takes me back to Veronica, and what a great thing that they have an opportunity like that to learn skills.
Yeah, exactly. And then the last one is one of those sort of, it seems small, but it's such a huge milestone, where there's a technology that I know it exists in this country, though we don't use it very much because we don't need to, where you can take a flash drive and plug it into your computer, and it serves as an antenna for the internet. And it's a technology that they use a lot in Zambia, I'm sure all over Africa, because they don't have access to the internet in the way that we do. It's very, very expensive and that sort of thing. The infrastructure just isn't there. So it's one of the main ways that people use to have internet access. And we've never been able to use it in Cantalomba. There's a hill between Cantalomba and what's called Koloko Hill, which is really the only high spot in all of Ndola. And all of the city's technology lives up there, all the internet places and television and satellites, and it's all up there. But there's always been this block between Cantalomba and that hill. And for some reason, Teresa realized a few weeks ago that she was able to get a signal strong enough to send me an email. She was so excited, sent me an email. And I said, Teresa, you've got to get on the internet with people, because we've always realized that connecting Cantalomba with the internet would be a huge breakthrough in terms of their exposure to possibility. And so I projected, you know, oh, yeah, we'll do that, we'll do that. But I guess it's one of those things where, you know, when you don't really realize what the possibility is, you don't hop on it. So anyway, a couple weeks ago, something went viral on YouTube, that's what I'm trying to say. And it was a video that I swear about a dozen people sent me within the span of a week. And it was this video about it came from the Philippines, I think, on a very, very simple technology that someone thought up of using an old 2-liter Coke bottle, putting water, and I think it's chlorine in it, attaching it to a piece of roofing, tin roof, cutting a hole in your roof and putting it down into your house. And during the day, it literally acts as a light bulb. And that could seem to us like, well, big deal. I mean, it's the middle of the day. Why do you need a light bulb in your house? But in places like Cantalomba, and it sounds like in Manila in the Philippines, for folks who are very poor, the houses are pitch dark. The windows are tiny. In Cantalomba, it's an issue of security. No one wants to have big windows because they're afraid people will break in, and they do break in. So the houses are really, really dark. So this really simple, cheap technology is such a great idea. So I sent it to Teresa. I said, you've got to have everyone watch this. So she sent me this great photo the other day where there's dozens of people gathered around the computer watching this video. I have goosebumps as I think about it. And she said people were so excited. And Eugenia, who is one of the women in the cooperative, said, I'm going to try it this weekend. I'm going to do it in my house. And I actually, this just happened, so I haven't heard the upshot, so I don't know, and we'll definitely report back. But it was just, for me, again, it was such a milestone of, wow, that's the beginning of a whole other possibility for folks there.
Wow. Is there anything else, Jen, that you, I know there's more, but you are one easy interview, I want to say. This. It was great and exciting. Anything else you want to add as we close?
I think you're right. There's always more, but we are at our time, and so we'll just have to schedule another one sometime. Thanks, Sequoia.
Thank you, Jen. Michael?
Yes.
And over to you.
Great. Thank you, Sequoia. Thank you, Jen. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Hello, Michael.
Wow, that was fun.
Wasn't it? Oh, it is. It's just, it's so, I don't know, what's the word for what it is to know that, to me, this might sound a little extreme, but I think it's accurate. People who had no life, no hope, no future, no really reason to get up in the morning, just slowly starving to death, are now, as Sequoia said, lit up and making their lives work. That they're making their lives work. They now have opportunities and choices that would seem so small and simple to us that most of the privileged folks we know would consider it great deprivation to have the kinds of things happen that are happening to these people. But for them, for people who have never experienced such a thing in their lives, it is beyond miraculous. And it just is so heart-opening to think of these folks. And of course, you know, for people like us we've known these people for years now, and watched all of these changes happen in their community and happen for them, it just makes you happy all over.
Yes, yes, it does. I just have this image in my mind of them all gathered around the computer watching YouTube. Now that's amazing.
It is amazing. You know, this is a little aside, and someday maybe we'll get Jen back to talk about this. But, you know, I know that people do great work in all kinds of parts of the world, getting books to folks. You know, you bring books into places where people have never seen books, and they just gobble them up. Well, Cantalumba is not that place. And you can bring books in there for a long time, and they're really interesting for a little while, and then they go to the back of a cupboard somewhere, and they disappear. Because it's hard to imagine, but it is so not a part of the culture. I mean, these are people who don't read and write their own language, let alone another language. You know, there's just no, it's just not interesting. But you put a computer in front of these people, and they are interested. And it's not, you know, as Jen was describing, we know what kids do with a computer. You know, that's just, that's instantaneous. And, you know, and I've Jen and I have talked about this since we've been there. You know, if we can get computers to those kids, they're going to be reading in a month because
yes.
they have to be able to read to do what they want to do, and they're really motivated to do that.
Yeah.
But with the adults, too. You know, I mean, you can watch videos of people creating light bulbs that poor people can have in their houses.
Yeah.
Oh, that's compelling. So
yeah.
It's just, and of course, then, you know, so often, I know I sound a little bitter and resentful here, but very privileged people in the West go into a thing about, well, aren't you destroying their culture with this? And isn't it a danger to open them up, you know? And my answer is no, it's not. You know, they're allowing them access to what we have access to, I don't think it's going to hurt them. And in terms of culture, well, it was destroyed years ago. So allowing them access to a modern world, which is the only culture that they have a possibility of participating in at this point, I think is a really good idea. And they
yes.
seem to think it's a really good idea, too.
Yes. Yes. Yes, it is very exciting. And I just love the idea of getting them connected to the Internet and all that that opens up.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, it's something as simple as, you know, you get an injury or you're having some sort of physical symptoms and you have no access to medical care.
Yes.
But you have the Internet.
Yes.
At
yes.
the monastery, you know, people are, you know, of course, everybody's with me at this point. But, you know, I would just, they would say something and I would say, Google it. You know, well, what,
right.
Google it. You know,
right.
you want to know, Google it. You know?
Right.
Now, can you believe everything on the Internet? No, you can't. But you can't believe everything a doctor tells you either. So, for God's sake, you know, we now have the ability to educate ourselves on any aspect of our lives. So today,
yeah.
You know, yesterday I was talking to somebody. We have this whole garbage can full of ash that came from somewhere. And I wanted to know, is ash good to put in the garden? And fortunately, we have a gardening expert who answered my question for me. But had he not been there, you know, I can look it up on the Internet. I can find out what kind of
yeah.
soil we have and will that work. I mean, it's just huge.
Yes. Yes. It's fabulous. It's great.
The whole world opens up.
Yes.
You know, I'm going to talk a little more, even though I know people are waiting and I shouldn't really be doing this, but in the email class that we're currently doing, what we're attempting to do is encourage people to be present to life as it is. Be still and just be as life unfolds. You can go to Cantalomba, you can go to the Living Compassion Compound, and you can see people who do that all day long because there's no alternative to it. They're not thinking about tomorrow. They're not making plans. They don't have a day timer. They don't have activities. They don't have concerns about soccer or childcare or going to work or any of the other things that in our part of the world take people away from life as it is.
Yes.
So it's just a complete flip into, all right, now, you know, I know how to be still and how to watch life unfold. I watch it all the time. And now an introduction to all of this reality that's possible that for us is, at this point, primarily distraction. Now, people would say, well, isn't that a mistake? And, of course, for me, no, it's not a mistake because we get to have the choice. We get to have both experiences, and if we're paying attention, we can take advantage of and appreciate the best of everything that life has to offer without losing conscious, compassionate awareness in the process. We're all really going for the same thing, even though we're coming in through into the light room through different doors.
I'm right with you. Yes. Yes.
It's amazing to be a part of, really. It truly is. It's kind of awe-inspiring and breathtaking for me.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes. It's my experience, too. It's great. Sherry, we have some announcements here.
All right.
Did you know the monastery in the springtime is an experience not to be missed?
I was just there all day, and I can attest to that fact. It is
great.
Gorgeous.
And what makes it perfect is Sangha gathering from all over for a retreat.
Mm.
We have a What You Practice is What You Have retreat that begins the 21st of April. We like to say it's a retreat like no other, where you'll see your life through a completely different lens.
Which is absolutely true, and we do have some spots in it because we've had, and we've just had a couple of cancellations. So if somebody's on the fence about this, now would be a good time to say yes and join us.
Great. It's not too late to sign up?
Uh-uh.
A few people have done the retreat twice, and they say it's even more powerful the second time.
I've done it four times.
We also have several There's Nothing Wrong With You retreats on the schedule. This is a fabulous 8-day retreat about having compassion for yourself and as an extension for everyone. It's a great first retreat and also a great retreat to repeat every couple of years. All the details and more are at schedule.livingcompassion.org. And I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes.
Thanks, Mike.
Ready, Sherry?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay, great. First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
This is Debbie. Hi, Michael. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, Debbie. What's going on?
Well, I wanted to follow up because I had a phone call with you a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And on that phone call, I told you that I was really struggling with a decision.
Yes.
And your advice, your guidance was to go to bed, and when I woke up in the morning, I would know.
Yes.
And that was great. I haven't looked back. I mean, that was the perfect advice. I woke up in the morning, and what came to mind for me was an experience at the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat that I was on during the summer.
Uh-huh.
Where, I became aware of a very committed and controlled relationship I had with myself and with practice. And there was a situation where the facilitator I was working with, I had an idea of how I expected things to go and how I wanted things to go during that retreat, in this particular part of the retreat. And this facilitator wanted it to go it in a different way. And she said, I'd be curious about, if you're not willing to go in this other way, I'd be curious if I were you, about why. And I sort of thought about my situation and how, I'd invested, nearly 20 years in a particular trajectory towards my life goals. It hadn't worked. And the guidance I had been getting from friends who had gone a different route, a number of them surrounding me, friends and clients, where they'd had success in this different trajectory, and then all of the people who were the practitioners I was working with, who have been working with me along the lines I have expected things to go, all of them have counseled this other way of doing it. Every single one. It's unanimous. And the doctors I'm working with, every bit of guidance I've gotten from every part of my life has been, try this way. And so when I woke up in the morning and I had that thought, I didn't look back, and I have felt great. And it's sort of like everything makes sense within that, because I just I feel committed to practice, but I don't feel crucial about it. It's not like if I get practice just right, then I'll get this result.
Well, and to me, what you're talking about is having practice kind of merged with a notion of should.
Oh yeah, I can tell you that is my conditioning is should, could, and
better be.
Should and could. I could be doing something else. I should be doing something else.
And so it's really important not to let conditioning marry that with practice.
Right.
Because those are radically different items, and conditioning wants us to put those together. So if conditioning means it has to be a certain way, which is perfect. You need to do it that way. It needs to come out that way. If you hold your mouth just right and control yourself enough, you can be perfect and make it happen. Now, if that gets identified as what practice is, then karmic conditioning has scored a big win.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very lucky because I have practiced, and I think practice has allowed me to let go of this agenda I've had for this 20-year agenda. I've let it go, and I teach a form of practice. I mean, I teach hatha yoga to a population where if I came at it with shoulds and coulds and crucialness, it would just never fly. It would just never work because they don't feel crucial about it or should. It's got to be fun and light and just fun.
Yeah.
And
it's got to, if we want to take it in this direction, it's got to help them end suffering, not bring more suffering.
Yeah, right. I mean, I this decision, which I never thought I would ever make, has just, like, freed me up so much.
Yes. Yeah.
I take my seriously. And every time I have tried to know exactly how to get it right, whether it's through diet or just the right practice or just this, I've never gotten it. I've just never gotten it at all.
No, and you never would. And you can't take it personally because no one ever would, because it just doesn't work that way. It just doesn't work that way. So what does work is, as you know, being open to the guidance of life. But putting somebody in charge of making you the perfect person, that's a triumph for ego, but it's never going to result in anything but suffering.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. That's good, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think we talked about this, that I would have, if I were going to encourage you one way or the other, which I would never do, by the way. Okay. And I would be very leery, actually, of people who do encourage you in one way or another. In other words, that's messing with somebody's life and karma in a way that I don't want the karma for.
Mm.
So my encouragement, I think, then was, and certainly now is, whatever you do, don't entertain regrets.
Yeah, I remember that, and I hold to that because I'm proud of myself for trying, actually, no matter what happens.
Oh.
I'm proud of myself for trying.
Yes. Well, to really get it, no conversation about it, that you're doing the best that you can do.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean you might not learn something down the road that would give you a different perspective. Swell, that'll be the new perspective, and you'll do the best you can with that.
Right. Right. And I'll never know if I was this close, and I'll never know. You know, I'll never know.
Nope. It doesn't matter.
Huh?
You'll only know what is.
Yeah. Well, I guess feeling good about it, you know, and having felt so bad about it, but feeling good seems to make me feel, I guess it's not even that it's the right decision. It's that, you know, that I'm committed to the decision.
I would project that what feels good is stepping free of that straitjacket that it sounds like conditioned mind had you in.
Yes, that's so true, Sherry, because it was all like if I could get this right, then I'll get this result.
Yeah, yeah, and you just drop that, and it's got to feel spacious.
It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, letting go is a great thing. It really is. It's a great thing. If people could get that the process of letting go feels better than any content could ever allow us to feel good. That was a terrible sentence, but maybe you know what I mean.
Totally. I mean, what I understood from that was letting go of like a whole aspect of self that I'm fully identified with frees up. For me, it just frees up so much energy, and there's so much happiness there, and that's much better than any content that I think would make me happy, because that I is not the same as the freedom that's there when the I isn't identified with the idea of happiness.
Yes, yes. Now, I don't know how many people who don't do this practice could have followed all of that, but you're exactly right. That what feels good is the absence of that identified clinging I.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Mm. Yes. Yes.
Well, congratulations. Now you're gonna keep us apprised of all of this as it unfolds,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Absolutely. Thank you so much.
No, we're a part of this whole process at this point.
Thank you so much. And
you're welcome.
I'm very much hoping to see you this summer if all goes as we plan.
Good.
Thank you, and thank you, Michael. Thank you so much.
Take care. Good night.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Debbie. Sherry, we are going to take a break for a very special message.
Oh, lovely.
And then we'll be right back.
Right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Greta from Washington State.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is David calling from Hawaii.
This is Janet calling from New Hampshire.
Hi, this is Catherine from St. Louis.
Rebecca from Austin, Texas.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Anna here from Yorkshire in England.
It's Ramita calling from South Carolina.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Todd calling from Canada.
2012 marks 10 years that Sherry and Michael have been doing Open Air. They have fielded thousands of your calls and archived hundreds of shows. In this year of deepening practice, we invite you to give a donation to support Open Air. Go to the Living Compassion website, click on the Donations tab, and make a donation of any size to the Zen Center, writing Open Air in the notes field. Step forward to be part of expanding the transformation. Lend your support today.
We're very lucky people.
We are very lucky people.
See you next week.
See you next week.
Good night.
Good night.
Well, that was fun.
That was very fun. That was
my
very
goodness.
Fun.
Wow.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I was thrilled when I heard it. It was great.
Yeah. Good. It was great to hear from some of our very favorite people too, huh?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And hopefully there are a lot more of our favorite people getting ready to talk to us tonight.
Yes. Yes. Let's bring on another one. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Virginia.
Hey, Virginia.
Hi, Sherry.
What's going on?
Well, let's see. First, just want to participate. Really want to participate and just not be silent.
Good, good. Always a good
yes.
choice.
Yeah, good choice. And also, I wanted to just talk to you about an awareness that came up for me today. And I think it's related to our email class, but I kind of just need to sleuth it out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So what I noticed was that there is a, for now I'll call it a subpersonality, I'm not really sure, but there is a part that that I am identified with often, and its thing is it's taking care of me. This all sounds very suspicious, but it's taking care of me. That's kind of what its motivation is. That's what it says.
And how does it do that?
Yes, it's usually through diet, exercise, and taking care of. It's kind of daily maintenance stuff like laundry and keeping things in order and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's big into food. So it's like a lot of time and energy is spent with that, identified with that thing. And then I guess the realization was that for me, for this person anyway, that the way that would really benefit Virginia, taking care of Virginia, is to bring awareness to sensations, to really be more dialed into like inner movement and sensation.
Okay, let me see if I'm keeping
yeah.
track with you here. So this this person
mm-hmm.
Monitors you to make sure you're eating well and getting exercise and doing your laundry and keeping your house clean and all of that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I've taken her as me for a really long time. I've been really identified with that person.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know that she monitors me as much as she's been the driver. She's been in the driver's seat.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this before we go on.
Mm-hmm.
Does she actually take good care of you, or is she kind of a master type? Does she have you eat good food and get enough sleep and drink water and moderate
yes.
exercise and all of that?
Yeah,
but,
But
does she, is she rigid about it?
In answer to that question, I would say sometimes she is. And what I really notice is that she's really obsessed with it. I mean, she's just like, that's her whole, I mean, it takes an inordinate amount of time and energy, I think.
Okay.
That's what I'm, yeah.
So if we tie it into the email class, then
mm-hmm.
What you're looking at is you spend a lot of your attention and awareness focused on what she wants you to attend to
yes.
kind of doing the daily maintenance of Virginia.
Yes, yes, exactly. And exactly. That's exactly it. And then today I just got this, well, I understood that there's another place to cultivate, that there's another place to put attention that Virginia is longing for, and that is very powerful when I'm there. It's just that there's no time to do that because it's all focused on this other stuff.
Yeah, and the struggle then is, so if we were to say from center,
mm-hmm.
You would be able to take good care of Virginia in all of those ways, make sure she eats well and exercises
mm-hmm.
and all of that, without it becoming an obsessive, all-consuming demand on attention.
Yes, that's
and
it. Yeah.
And it wouldn't take you out of the moment in order to focus on this caretaking.
Right.
Does that feel like what
yeah.
the issue is?
Yeah, I think, yeah, because when you say it would not take you out of the moment, you mean that concurrently I could be paying attention to my body sensations and be present with that.
Yes.
Yeah.
As you're fixing the food, as you're eating,
right.
as you're doing your exercise, as you're, you wouldn't be lost in her world of what it means to do taking care of Virginia, you would be here, present, breathing, and life would be performing all of those activities through the physical form that we call Virginia.
Yeah. I agree with that, Sherry. And I don't know if this makes sense either, but it's kind of like she gets a little bit too caught up in the minutiae of it.
Yes, yeah.
So it would be kind of, excuse me, having someone in there who's a little more balanced on that.
So here's an encouragement, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know whether it's an aspect of the personality or it's karmic conditioning, using this rather benign content
mm-hmm.
in order to control your attention.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. But something like the two-chair exercise could be helpful.
Okay.
I imagine you've talked to the mentor about it.
Yeah, I mean, this just kind of happened a few hours ago, I will be talking with the mentor about it, yes.
Because just that little reminder that if it really is an aspect of the personality, then
mm-hmm.
she will be open to the realization that her focus of taking care of Virginia is limited. That in order for all of Virginia to be cared for, she can't be quite as rigid in her approach because that takes it out of balance. Now, if she's not willing to give up any control, then we can begin to suspect that it's karmic conditioning taking advantage of a situation.
Okay, yeah.
And that's the first thing to kind of get clear about, because then you really know what you're up against.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's good. I will do that, Sherry.
All right.
I guess what else I noticed was just that when I'm not identified with her, I tend to feel more energized.
Yeah. She's taken your energy.
Yeah.
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 And yes. So again, if she is a benevolent influence, then she won't want to take your energy. She'll want to work with you to make sure that you don't lose any of these aspects of your life that she considers really important. But she doesn't want to be a burden or an energy drain. If she does want to be an energy drain, then
we've got to
get the clutching grip of egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate off from around your neck.
Okay, got it. Okay, great.
All right.
Yeah, thank you.
Let me know.
I'll let you know. Thanks, Sherry.
Right.
Thanks, Michael.
Good night.
Alrighty. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Virginia. You're listening to Open Air. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
Okay.
Hi, this is Scott from Porch Dog Software. Today we're talking with Lanny, one of Porch Dog's favorite clients. Lanny, what do you think Open Air listeners might want to know about working with Porch Dog?
Well, Scott, I think they might want to know that you write all kinds of software for Macs and iPhones and iPads and for all types of companies, big ones and small ones like mine. And you do your work with a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah. You know, one of the things we love about Open Air is the energy and enthusiasm in every show. We try and get lit up about everything we do here at Porch Dog Software, too.
Everything?
Yep. Especially the things we don't like.
Sweet.
Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
This song by Trish Bruxford Colligan invites us to celebrate the unique light each of us brings to the world. Simply Celebrate wants to support you in living into that light, no matter where you are on the path, but especially when it's a little hard to see in the dark. With great gratitude to Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha, Simply Celebrate uses the practice as a foundation for everything we do. We offer coaching, books, and self-mentoring programs to help you find more joy, color, spontaneity, and connection, moment to moment. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. Sherry, we have another caller.
Very good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Anna from Seattle calling.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine. I'm really nervous, but I'm good. I'm just calling to participate also and just to call. And get over the nervousness of calling.
All right, so our main objective then is just to breathe.
Do it. Just to call, yes.
Yes, and breathe and just be here. And so yes. As we do that, tell me a little bit about what's going on in practice.
What's going on in practice? So right now, I also wanted to talk about so I'm trying to find and be motivated in my life. First, I want to find a motivation and a passion for something to do because I don't really know what to do with my life.
Uh-huh. So
I'm finished studying now. I have a bachelor's and I'm a nanny and I like that work. But altogether, I don't really know. You know, I want to have a motivation, really.
You don't have much motivation?
Yeah, or a passion for something. I don't so much. But, yeah.
And
but that's actually not what I wanted to talk about, but that could be one thing, I guess.
What did you want to talk about?
I really don't have anything specific to talk about, besides maybe that my mind is going blank.
Yes, well, it often does when you ask it to perform. So let me ask you this. Are you passionate about awareness?
Yes.
See, all of my life, I really, not all my life, because I caught on to it at some point, but kind of recently, actually. It troubled me that I have no ambition. You know, there was never anything that, as you say, that I was passionate about, never anything that I really wanted to do, no burning desire to, you know, accomplish something. I wasn't particularly interested in money. I certainly wasn't interested in, making a mark or, any of that sort of thing. So I just kind of, went along doing awareness practice. And at some point, I realized, well, that is the thing I'm passionate about. I don't care about the things that people told me I should care about, especially when I was growing up. But the relationship that I've had with awareness practice is certainly passionate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe you're in my club.
Maybe. I'm passionate, or I guess, I really enjoy discovering new things about myself and what's going on with my body and all those kinds of things right now. So,
yeah.
I'm doing, with my therapist, somatic experiencing.
Huh?
Because I've had many surgeries.
You've had what?
When I was little. Many surgeries when I was little.
Oh, uh-huh.
Surgeries.
Yeah.
And so I'm doing that kind of for trauma in my body. And so that's, a lot of layers are unfolding. Well, I don't know how to say, but yeah.
Yeah. So
good.
So that actually might be enough to focus on, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're bringing conscious, compassionate awareness to your life. Now, see, this was true for me anyway. I thought it was really handy that I didn't have something else that I was supposed to be really enthusiastic about. So if I had had a job that expected me to show up and give all of my time and attention to the job, that just wouldn't have worked for me, because that would have taken away from the time that I was spending seeing how life worked.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. So you considered coming on retreat at any point?
Say that again.
Do you ever consider coming on retreat?
I was at a retreat last year, not Rock But How, in July.
Of course you were. I remember
there.
You now.
Yeah. Really? Oh,
yes, of
great.
Course.
Yeah. And I want to come again, yes.
Very
I will
good.
Come, hopefully.
Yeah.
Yes. Maybe this year, hopefully.
Good.
Sometime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would just really encourage you not to spend, not to give any attention or energy to voices that think you ought to be doing something other than exactly what you are doing.
Okay.
And that what you
right.
what you are doing, you're doing. Now, my teacher used to say, if something is worth doing, it's worth doing with two hands. Which meant, of course, giving it all of your attention and awareness. So bringing everything that you have to whatever it is that you're focused on.
Okay.
And just
yeah.
see what happens.
All right.
Now that you've gotten over the shock of calling in, you can we can hear from you more often, right?
Okay.
Good.
But I might have to talk about just how my mind goes blank every time. But that's okay.
That passes actually with a little bit of
yeah.
you know, a little bit of familiarity.
Okay.
So,
I don't know. It never passes in any class or presentations. I always have it.
Well,
every time.
We'll see. I just have a strong intuition it's not terminal.
Okay, great.
All right.
All right.
There.
Thank
Good
you
night.
Very much.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Anna. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Quinn. Just a moment.
Hello.
Hi, this is Quinn. I'm Justin.
Uh-oh, you have to get off that speaker or
oh.
whatever that is.
Well, I thought I did. Okay, there I go.
There it is.
Whew. Well, I have called and told you how much I enjoyed painting, and I'm still enjoying painting, and I got slam dunked into the dark room this last week. Bam.
What happened? What happened?
I let the voices go into an old program of nobody likes me.
Oh, wow. Now, did they have some sort of evidence, or was it just time for that to kind of cycle around in the karmic scheme of things?
I will say there was some sediment in the fluid that coalesced into a huge ulcer.
Wow.
And it was gross. It was bad. And I talked to my husband, and I was like, you know, I need to talk about this. And I said, I just feel like, you know, I'm being excluded by my friends. And he looked at me, and he went, how can you say that? You've known these women 35 years. You know they love you. You love them. What's the deal?
Oh, there's a reality check, huh?
And I went, okay. And I'm thinking, but they can't love me. You know, all my self-hate has blossomed. And he said, you're a lovely person.
Wow.
And he kind of looked at me like, what is the question here?
Wow, you weren't getting any traction at all with him, were you?
None. And I kind of was sitting there and I realized, why do I want to make myself suffer about this?
Well, and of course you didn't, right? That's the piece that we were all struggling to get all the time, right? You didn't want to make yourself suffer over this. But egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate definitely was on a campaign to get you pulled into an artificial reality and convince you that there was a great deal there for you to suffer over.
That's true. I feel like that is the one place that I'm most vulnerable.
Uh-huh. Now, which is always the case, right? I mean, that is what karmic conditioning does. It knows with each one of it, you know, it's a perfect relationship because it knows what you're vulnerable to. So it only hits you with stuff that you're going to react to. You know that?
But, yeah, it's true because if they come back and say, "Oh, you're not good at your job," I'd just go, "Ha ha ha."
Yes, it would be ridiculous. You wouldn't fall for it. Or if they said to me, "Nobody likes you," my response would be, "And the problem with that is."
Is that supposed to be news?
Yeah. So realizing that, okay, so there you are. Your husband isn't being supportive at all. And so how did you manage to let them toss you into the pit of the dark room?
Because my husband was being totally supportive.
Yes, I was tongue in cheek.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't supporting you in the idea that nobody liked you.
He wasn't going to feed my obsession and rumination over it.
That's right. That's right.
No.
So did you have to go to other sources or what?
No, I sat there and I looked at him and I realized this is an old program.
Good for you.
This is me wanting to punish myself. This is me wanting to let all my insecurities and everything that I personally dislike about myself, which is most of it's made up, you know, oh, well, they must have thought this, you know. And when I look back at reality, you know, I'm not selfish, I'm not mean, I'm not hateful, I'm not sarcastic, and I have good qualities that
okay.
I bring to a
now,
relationship.
All right, now, again, I'm gonna beat on this drum because it's really important. It is not that there are qualities that you don't like about yourself. I know it's presented in that way, but that's actually not what's going on. What happens is you identify with karmic conditioning, self-hate, and from that position, look at Gwen and say, she's blah, 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 blah. Or you identify with someone who is young and vulnerable, and the voices say, you are blah, 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 blah. And that young person in you believes the voices and feels bad. But it's not you doing it. You see what I'm saying?
And if I consult the mentor, I realize it's not me.
That's right. It's if from center, you would never have that experience. Center would never look at you and say, these are the qualities about you I don't like. That would just never happen.
Yeah?
Yeah?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And center would never beat you up for how you are or criticize you or judge you or compare you to someone else and find you lacking. That would never happen from center. The mentor would never engage in any of those behaviors. So we know that it is that force that hangs around constantly trying to attach a hook somewhere so that it can gain access to your life force.
And I know that at some points when I'm thinking, you know, just let it go, you know, don't pay any attention to all that, another voice steps in and goes, and I know it's from a childhood subpersonality, if you don't pay attention to what I'm telling you, you're a fool.
Yes, that's self-hate.
Yes.
Okay, that's self-hate. And so for that reason, here's the encouragement from our practice. What you do is turn your attention to what you know is true. And so, you know, your husband gave you some of those points. Just a few minutes ago, you went through some of them. You know, I would not do it in the negative. I would not say I'm not a mean person. I would say I'm a kind person. I'm a caring person. I'm a loving person. And so with your recordings, you make recordings that affirm what you know to be true about this human being we call Gwen.
I did that today.
Yes, very good. And then when that starts in on you, you don't argue with it. You don't anything with it. You just realize that it's there and it started. You reach for your recorder, you hit that file, and you start listening to information that is true about her. And you do it every time those voices start in and try to take you into a suffering place with them.
Mm-hmm. Well,
okay.
I did the recordings and I listened to them twice.
Very good.
This happened 2 days ago. And the Voice Busters cartoon showed up and I just laughed until I cried because it was like, he always just hits the spot with the Voice Busters.
They're
hanging in the dungeon.
Very good. Very good.
And I have a really quick question. I would love to come to the You Are What You Practice. You have what you practice is what you have.
Uh-huh.
But I haven't had an email class, and you don't offer one before the June
Ooh, this
retreat.
Is true. So you don't have a recording and listening practice.
Well, I record and listen, but I haven't had the email class.
I see. Well, would you shoot a little email to the registration office, and we'll talk about that. Because the
sure.
main thing about the email class is that people have to be grounded in a recording and listening practice. That's
mm-hmm.
why there's that requirement for that retreat.
Mm-hmm.
But if you already have a recording and listening practice, if, you know, obviously you're familiar with the mentor and all of that, then I'm sure it would be no problem at all for you to go to that retreat.
Well, last June in the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat, we started the recording and listening.
Yes, and you've continued it.
Yes.
Oh, very good. All right. Because that's recording and listening is a big part of the What You Practice retreat. I mean, it's not a part of the retreat, but you're asked regularly to record and listen about what your experiences are. So
mm-hmm.
for people who don't have that practice, that can be, you know, a hindrance for them.
Mm-hmm.
But since you already have that practice, I think you'd do fine.
Okay. Well, I will shoot a note to the registrar, and I want to say thank you so much, and you and Michael both, for being there every week.
Well,
and
you are very welcome.
I try
thank
to be
you.
Here every week, too.
Okay, good.
And gosho to all Sangha.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Gwen.
Thank you.
Good
Bye-bye.
Night.
Thanks for joining us, Gwen. You're listening to Open Air. Sherry, we have another caller.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Isabel calling from San Francisco.
Well, good evening, Isabel.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well, and I'm also calling in for support because I've had a lot of resistance to practicing. There has been a lot of resistance, should I say.
And now, let me ask you this. Are you doing the resistance email class, or did you have so much resistance you didn't do it?
I had so much resistance that I fell behind by about 4 classes. Yeah, and then on Friday, I decided to start again, and so I did process mapping of writing down the process of the voices that I heard as I contemplated starting up again.
Uh-huh.
And so that was really helpful. So I saw the part of the process that prevents me from restarting once I've, quote unquote, fallen behind.
Uh-huh.
So that was helpful. So I've caught up by two of the classes. So I feel I'm re-energized to keep going. And I had a guidance appointment on Saturday, which was helpful as well.
Good. Good. Well, they must be going crazy.
Yes, it's been a thing that's been going for the last few months. Like, it's also been difficult to do my daily meditation practice as well.
Yeah, yeah. So you've hit the proverbial dry spell in practice.
Mm.
Right? Yeah, which usually, of course, follows a period of good practice, right, or easy practice, or fulfilling, or whatever it is, which I think you were having for quite a while there, weren't you?
I was, and I came on the one-month retreat in July, and then my practice definitely deepened, and I was looking at making more of a commitment, and then, I look back, it's like, has it been since then? I don't know exactly, but it's definitely, like, that's part of what makes it so difficult is the voices can look back and say, yeah, but a year ago, this was all so much easier and you were meditating more and staying on top of the email classes more.
Yeah,
so it's
and
using that comparison.
Of course, what you can say to them is, good point, and, of course, that's what I'm going to start doing now.
Mm.
So, I this is probably the kind of thing I shouldn't divulge, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Whenever anybody makes noises about deepening their commitment to practice, I mentally prepare myself not to see them again for an extended period of time.
Okay.
Because the mere mention of deepening practice or committing for a longer time or what in any of that sort of thing, and I mean, conditioning is just going to gather the troops and launch the attack. And because, it's really good at what it does. It's not like it screams in terror in the middle of the night. No, you can't go. It just, it starts doing all that subtle. You kind of get busy and interested in other things, and this is going on and that's going on, and you're just drifting farther and farther and farther over there, but it's nothing dramatic. It's not like you're falling in a ditch. And then, as you've noticed, at some point you kind of start coming to and wonder, what happened to me? So don't take it personally.
That's what I'm working on.
Yeah, and it's illuminating, isn't it? It's good to see.
It is. I'm starting to see it's a similar process with nutrition or, other commitments.
Yeah. Exercise. Anything. Anything that's good for you is liable, to come under the same sort of attack.
And it's really helpful to hear what you said about, a dry spell and that this can be expected because I'm seeing there was a real story there that practice should just deepen and deepen and deepen, like, progressively, and that I wouldn't hit these quote-unquote bumps or setbacks.
Well, here's the deal. There's nothing to say this isn't a perfect part of a deepening practice.
Yeah.
Now, the voices would like to convince you that certainly that's not the case. But if we consider that this is awareness practice, and what we're going to get to see before it's over is everything that can pull us away from simply being in life, then we have to expect this kind of thing.
Mm.
And I would offer to you, lo these many years of doing practice, that sometimes there's a tremendous desire in this direction, sometimes in this direction, sometimes in, sometimes all I want to do is sit. Sometimes all I want to do is be in silence. Sometimes all I want to do is read, Bankai or whatever it is. Sometimes that kind of thing. The trick is not to let it mean anything.
Hmm. So would that be not to let it mean anything that I'm feeling discouraged?
That's
or
right. So if you get it, that you are on the path.
Uh-huh.
If you get it, that there isn't an alternative to that. Then you can see that whatever happens is a part of being on the path.
Yes. I can see that.
Yeah. And so that way, if, you stop meditating for 3 months and it suddenly you come to realize that that happened, and for most of us, we realize we come to because life stops working, right? I'm thoroughly miserable. I'm completely depressed. I hate life, whatever it is. And then we go, I seem to have stopped practicing. If you realize that this is all part of being on the path, then you just start meditating.
Uh-huh.
You just say, thank you, and get your cushion.
Okay. That's really helpful. Because then I can't say it's something wrong.
Right. Well, what this means then is you should just quit because I just learned a really powerful lot of information about how completely a human being can be bamboozled. Now, how did that happen?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'm not suggesting, of course, that we go back and analyze it, but the information is usually pretty clearly right there. And so, okay, I'm going to keep a little eye on that because I bet it's going to happen again.
Well, exactly. Yeah. It's made me actually more committed to watch to see how I don't meditate.
That's right. And each time one of these things happens to us, we do become more committed.
That's also what I'm seeing. It kind of did get me to the point of, well, gosh, maybe this just is like I need to or want to, to commit further.
Yes.
So that I won't fall for this.
Yes. And, of course, you probably still will.
I will.
But if
each
time you do, you're more committed, this can't be a bad
thing. Great. And speaking of which, part of why I'm calling too is I decided to do the 6-week commitment to call every 6 weeks.
Good for you.
And that's a huge thing that it's always told me I'm not allowed to do. So that is actually a step in the direction of being more committed.
Oh, yeah. And, you could make a list probably of things that it tells you you're not allowed to do and then make it what do they call that, a bucket list or something like that? Make that your list of things you're definitely going to do.
Uh-huh.
If for no other reason, it's telling you you're not allowed to. It's telling you you're not allowed to do something in your own life? Really? I don't
right.
think so.
Yeah.
See what I mean?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I do for no other reason than to show that it's my life.
It's my life.
Not the voice's life.
That's right. I'll do what I want.
Yeah.
Very good.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being here on the other end of the phone.
You are so welcome. Let's talk again.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. We'll call in 6 weeks.
Okay.
Okay.
Great.
Sorry.
Good night.
Okay. Good night. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Isabel. You've been listening to Open Air with Cher Huber. Wow.
Good people. Good stuff. Good
great
practice.
Great people. Yes, great practice. Yes.
All
thank
right.
You,
aren't we into 11 years yet, Michael? What's this? We've been doing this for 10 years. I wonder what our anniversary is so we can mark it every year. And we'll get them to change that little say it. Now this marks the 11 years that Sherry and Michael have been doing this every week.
Yes.
Growing old together.
Yes.
All
great.
Right. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.